Hey guys, good afternoon, and welcome to the Mark Stein Club live Q&A around the planet. And I am delighted to be joining you at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. It's Laura Rosen Cohen, your uppity Jewish mom and guest host for the day. As I warned you guys earlier, it's last minute Charlie for me to be jumping in right now. So I'm actually in a very cramped studio arrangement, not with my regular tools and devices. So if you hear any weird YouTube videos, any, you know, old Barney, any really crazy music, that would be coming from the general direction of my special needs son, just in the interest of last minute being able to do this gig this afternoon. We had to juggle around and got a little bit of a full house this afternoon, but we should be all good. So hopefully we'll have no technical glitches and no domestic interruptions on my end. As we told you, Mark is a little bit under the weather and he definitely needs to preserve his strength for the upcoming Mark Stein cruise. I think that the cruise is sold out. Maybe there's a few spots left, and definitely if you haven't gone on one of these cruises, you really should consider it if you're not signed up already. Lots of fun, lots of like-minded people. One of the best things about it is just being able to talk to people and not be at all afraid to tell your jokes, to make your political comments. You will definitely be among friends. So yes, we are sending Mark Stein lots of healing vibes, lots of positive energy, lots of virtual chicken soup. And even though Mark is under the weather, I just got, before we came onto air, we just got a little ray of sunshine, some breaking news, which is that Mark Stein's team, his lawyer has just filed a motion, really just now as we speak, in DC court regarding sanctions against Michael Mann. And in the order of $27,000 plus is being sought for attorney's fees and costs to defendant Stein to sanction the bad faith trial misconduct of plaintiff Mann and his counsel. And this motion is also requesting an award of $10,000 and change in fees, the cost of preparing docs for the court. Anyways, it's a good development, and there have been some other really good developments in the case. I think Michael Mann has lost a lot of face, and hopefully he'll lose a lot of money, because as we all know, and as Mark has always said, the process is the punishment with these trials in America. And unfortunately, every element of your life is destroyed when you are entangled in one of these cases or any such case. It drains your bank account, it wrecks you financially, emotionally, psychologically, you lose friends, you lose a lot of your life, and time is the one thing that nobody can get back to do the things that they wanted to do before they were completely buried in legal hell. So anyways, that is breaking news, and hopefully there will be some more positive results from that. So that was just in. I wanted to get to that first. And also to let you know that we have a lot of stuff to get to. There's a lot of crazy, crazy stuff happening in the United Kingdom right now. We've gotten a couple of comments, so we'll get to the United Kingdom a little bit later in the show, including the charges that have been filed against Loza Fox. We will get to that because it really does seem like the British courts and the police want to Tommy Robinson this poor guy. And we will also get to Easter celebrations being canceled in the United Kingdom. We also have certainly what to talk about in Canada. I know that a few of you want to talk about what the polls are like, how the Liberals can possibly in Canada be ahead of the Conservatives in polling. And of course, we will also get to the fact that our friend Andrew Lawton, our very own Andrew Lawton, is running for federal government in Canada, which is really exciting. So we are going to get to all that. And Andrew, of course, would make a fantastic member of federal parliament. So we are all rooting for him. And we'll get to some of the Canadian stuff a little bit later in the show. We definitely have a few questions about that. As well, some of you also wanted to touch on the fact that we have a little nothing burger non-scandal going on in America right now with the Signal messages that were allegedly shared in a group Signal chat with Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic. And, you know, it's okay. It's either like super sloppy or some kind of, you know, 4D, 3D chess Trump move to get a leak to happen, or some kind of deep state move. Who knows? We don't really know enough at this point. We do know that Jeffrey Goldberg is not exactly a fan of President Trump. We know that he's a raging kook leftist. That is definitely a fact. And although I have no personal connection whatsoever to this story, sometimes I find in life that there's like 6 degrees of Laura Rosen-Cohen, and I'm connected to some interesting people, and sometimes I'm connected to people just by happenstance, and I wonder like, oh, this is a really weird coincidence, and it happens repeatedly. Like, just as an example, you know, I went to university with a lovely, lovely Greek girl who I became very good friends with, and her brother was an engineer. Anyways, to make a long story even longer, her brother was in engineering, and it turned out that he's the fellow who started Dominion Voting. And again, like, what are the chances that I would like have a personal connection to this? So anyways, with Jeffrey Goldberg, I actually don't have a personal connection, but I did want to tell you that I was banned on Twitter. Blocked by Jeffrey Goldberg on Twitter when it was still Twitter and not X. And the reason that that happened is because he made some kind of sweeping statement about how I think it was like in our current times, you know, more Muslims are being killed by Muslims than Muslims are killing non-Muslims. It was very broad, and it didn't seem to me accurate at the time. And again, we're not talking about over the past 100 years. Like, if somebody made the statement, for example, that in the past 100 years that Muslims, there's been more intra-Muslim murder than there has been Muslims and infidels, that actually, I believe, is quite accurate. Between all of the conflicts between Shias and Sunnis, if you go back to around, let's say, 1925, I do think that, and I did a little bit of research about this, there would be probably more Muslim-on-Muslim murder and violence than there has been infidels. However, we were talking about, I think, a more recent age. Anyways, I asked him something like, I replied back to him something, and he didn't like my answer. And then I think I said something to him to the effect of that he might need to purchase a new pair of President Obama knee pads. And yes, it's crude, I know. I can't help myself sometimes. And so I got blocked by him. And actually, I'm sort of proud of that block. I was also blocked by Professor Michael Mann. And I think that it says a lot about you when you talk about who blocks you. You know, Mark quotes, I think it's Kafka, who, if I'm recalling correctly, it's the people that you cannot joke about are the guys that are in charge. That's basically the gist of what Mark has always said. So if you can't joke about X, Y, or Z, then those are the people who are truly in power. And I think that when you get blocked by somebody on Twitter, X, that also shows a lot more about them than it does necessarily about you. And it's generally a good indicator of what people are about and what they stand for. Similarly, for example, like when the New York Times urges somebody to do something, or you just have to know that whatever it is, they're wrong and do the opposite. So if you really want to know what not to do, you can use the New York Times, for example, as a guiding light. Anyways, that's my thoughts on being blocked and on Jeffrey Goldberg. You guys might have other thoughts, and of course, anybody on the planet can be listening to this broadcast and to any of the live Q&As. Only members, however, can ask questions, and we do, I believe, have a number of really great questions. And if you guys feel like sharing with me what your indicators are of what to listen to or what not to listen to, then if you are a member, you can feel free to pop some comments into our comment box. And if you would like to take something up with me personally, you can certainly find me on X at Laura Rosen Cohen. I do love X. That is my online crack. And or shoot me an email either via the club or to my full name at gmail.com. I am always happy to hear from people what their comments and their thoughts are. So that is the case right now. We have lots of questions and thoughts, so we're going to get right to it. And we are going to start with, let's see, we've got Olga from Arizona. Olga says, "Hi, Miss Laura. It's always so nice to hear from you." Well, thank you, Olga from Arizona. It is lovely to hear from you as well. "I do hope Mr. Stein is recovering speedily before the big Euro sojourn. My Jewy comment du jour is that apparently the Gazan relocation program idea has quite caught on. I read this morning that the first 100 Gazans are already headed to Indonesia, and the Jews have a brand new migration unit to handle all the logistics. This is kind of a big deal, n'est-ce pas? Joyous wishes, Olga. P.S. and yes, obviously want to hear all about how Andrew's campaign is going. Thank you for updating us." So lots of good stuff in here. Thank you, Olga, for your questions and your comments. I do agree that the even moving 100 Gazans is a positive development. I happen to love the Gaza relocation plan. I love that president's approach. No matter what ends up happening in the end, he has identified that there's no point in trying the same thing that has been done over and over and over again. And I think that that's a positive development, that some movement has been made, and hopefully that will continue. And really, if there are Gazans who want a better life and do not want to be in a war zone and do not want to be held prisoner by Hamas, then this is a good opportunity to start a new life. So yes, I think that it is actually good news. And in terms of Andrew's campaign, you know, Andrew has been doing all the walkabouts in the areas that he wants to represent. And as you know, he is a very personable guy. He has great ideas. He's a great speaker. And he is very well known to the community because he was a radio broadcaster as well as a journalist, and has a few great books under his belt in addition to all the great things that he did here at Stein Online. So I have the sense that that his riding, and it's actually it's a mix of like three areas in southern Ontario, and I hope and I have a good feeling about it going conservative. Andrew has been out canvassing, doing all the right things. So I don't think that I have any specific polling data for the region right now that he's wanting to represent, but I think it's generally he's got a good conservative crowd out there, and he's well known. So let us just hope and pray that we will be talking about Andrew Lawton, MP, very shortly. It's really exciting. And if anybody else wants more information, also obviously you can go check out Andrew's X feed, and also he can also be found and his activities at andrewlawton.ca. So if we get any more news about that, we'll definitely keep you guys posted. Okay, let's see what else we've got here. We have a question from Eric Dale. "Laura, hail to the queen of the Q&A, long may she reign. Loose lips sink ships, but sharing the chat link on pending airstrikes is good enough for government work. What do we think we're going to accomplish in Yemen that the Saudis couldn't, nor the Biden administration with using airstrikes? Could this be a sign from God that we should be taking the ramp out of the Middle East?" Oh, thanks, Eric, for your kind nod to my royalty. I think that just the best thing about all of this is just Trump showing the world who's boss. I don't know if this is going to be an off-ramp at all, but I think obviously Yemen is like a pathetic country. They're pathetic, and all they have to brag about is like Jahnoon and that Ofra Haza maybe came from Yemenite Jewish lineage. They're a nothing place, but they're close enough to lob missiles at Israel, so they're funded by Iran, and so it's really not a message for Yemen necessarily, it's a message to Iran, right? And I think that the Trump administration is making a lot of very strong and positive declarations about what their position is on Iran. I generally don't think that America should be involved in the Middle East, like definitely not American boots on the ground anywhere in the Middle East. It's a recipe for disaster. I mean, democracy building in the Middle East was absolutely futile, cost a lot of blood and treasure, and it was a really stupid move because most of the Middle East is not ready for democracy. They're not interested in democracy, and if they are interested in democracy or freedom, their definition of that is basically Sharia. So let's stay out of the quagmires. I think we'll just have to wait and see. You know, Trump has not been in office for very long, and we're seeing so many good things. So I think we just have to be a little bit patient. Trump is steering the ship. There's going to be some loose cannons, some balls and some missiles that are lobbed that maybe are not as effective. But I think the general policy direction is really quite excellent. So thanks, Eric, for chiming in. Okay, I'm going to take something that comes from Bossy Nova. Hi, Laura. I saw something posted on X by Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu earlier today. It was a video of him talking about the Israeli deep state and how the protests in Israel are now about the left trying to keep control of the judiciary and other levels of power. Is Israel heading towards a civil war? Thank you for that question. It was a really good clip. I did see that. It was posted by Caroline Glick, who's now the journalist, who's now an advisor to Netanyahu on international affairs. So she's been writing less. So that's why she's been popping up less in the Laura's Links column. I think anybody who wants to understand the politics of Israel is that you have to know that there always has been kind of a slow burn civil war going on here in Israel. And it's the left versus the right, and it always has been. If you look into Israeli history, there was always a very contentious relationship between left and right in Israel, even before the founding of the state, culminating in an attack. You guys can look up the Altalena if you're interested, but basically the leftist secular Ashkenazi majority who were in pre-state control, and they controlled all the levers of state power as well, and largely clandestine immigration, etc. And they were in power, they had the public unions, everything was under the control of the left until Menachem Begin was elected in 1979. That was like a revolution. At that time, the Israeli left realized that, first of all, they were shocked by it, just like how in America people were shocked by Trump being elected. And so they quickly, with the left, they decided after Begin was elected that they better consolidate power. So then there was a slow march even further through all the institutions, the arts, education, but especially the judiciary. And they wanted to make sure that it wouldn't matter who was in power, i.e. who got voted for, but that the permanent bureaucracy and the judiciary and arts and education would always be in the pocket of the left. So it wouldn't matter if a right-wing government got elected, everything would still stay the same, which also you can see is similarly happening in America, except that Trump is yielding quite a big hammer to smash a lot of the institutions in America and dealing with a lot of the deep state bureaucracy. So it's the same thing it's happening in Israel. And the Israeli left has made it clear that they are fine with having a civil war with bloodshed between brothers in order to save their power. So now the fault lines are basically about the Supreme Court, like the process by which Supreme Court judges are elected. In Israel, basically, there's like a judiciary junta, essentially. And a lot of the protests are also just plain Netanyahu. And unfortunately, a lot of the demonstrations that are ostensibly for the hostages are basically just really anti-government, anti-Bibi stuff, and a lot of it has been hijacked. So it's pretty messy business, but I will post that video in Laura's links this week if I remember to do that after we finish our broadcast. It's a good addition, and it's really a good explanation of what's been happening. And again, it's a mirror of what is happening also in America, which is really super dangerous. Okay, let us go a little bit further down to our questions and see what else we've got. Okay, we've got a Canadian question here from Alyssa Angel, who says, what happens to Justin Trudeau now that he's no longer PM? Where does he live? Will he go back to teaching drama classes? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what's your best guess? So thank you so much, Alyssa, for that question. I really don't know at this point. I think that Trudeau is basically like a liability. He doesn't have any particular skills as an orator. He is known by liberal insiders, I believe, to be quite a petulant, difficult person. He's now a single guy who goes to Taylor Swift concerts and wears Swifty bracelets, which is kind of creepy. I'm not sure who would like hire him. Not that he has to work, because he comes from a very wealthy family, and the Trudeau Family Foundation is also, you know, just chock full of cash. So I find it hard to imagine, because he doesn't have any charm really, that anybody would offer him a gig like on the world stage with some, you know, phony baloney job. But his ego is so large that he's not going to want to fade into obscurity. So I can't really make any predictions now. You know, it's not like he has Obama's oratory skills or anything like that. I think he's really a liability. I think it would probably be best for him to just lay low and stay out of public anything for a while. But I would be surprised if he was offered the usual kind of high profile, low actual work kind of position. I could be wrong, but I don't think he's going to have a very illustrious future. I hope that answers your question slightly. A really good question, and I think we'll just have to like wait and see on that. Okay, let's move along, and we have Leo VT, who says, hi Laura, nice to have you back on. Thank you so much. As you, I am looking forward to Andrew Lawton, MP. Can the Conservatives win with all the legacy media against them? We saw the Globe, that would be Canada's Globe and Mail, already try to smear him. Turns out the Globe is tied to Carney's 100 million people by 2100 plan. Seems like it has become an uphill battle. I am afraid Carney is Keir Starmer, Canadian style. So for those of you who are non-Canadians trying to decipher what is going on in Canadian politics, there is a fellow by the name of Mark Carney, who basically never has even really solidly lived in Canada. He's worked abroad. He was like the governor of the Bank of Canada and then the governor of the Bank of England. And then all of a sudden, when Justin Trudeau resigned as leader of the Liberal Party, he was the chosen one. The Liberal Party here, who Ezra Levant calls the Libranos, they made it very clear that they wanted Mark Carney to be the leader. And anybody else who made any efforts to raise money, etc., was like completely disqualified. People were very outraged about it. In fact, one of the funniest things was that there was an MP, I'm going to screw up her name, but she was very well known, Ruby Delafia, I think is how you pronounce it. Anyways, she raised a ton of money, got tons of people to sign up for Liberal Party memberships in order to vote for the new leader, and she was really sneakily, scummily disqualified. And it ended up that she, as a Liberal, went on Ezra Levant's Rebel News to talk about the scummy stuff that had happened. And I was like, oh my God, like this liberal, high profile liberal MP going on Rebel News, which is like the most right wing conservative outlet we have in Canada. Like I did not have that on my bingo card, but it just shows, I think, the extent to which people were outraged by this Mark Carney getting parachuted in. And he is like a Laurentian elitist, smug, gross, super wealthy, just an awful guy. And anyways, he's our prime minister. He doesn't even have a seat. He never was elected for anything, and he's the prime minister of Canada now. So it's everything's corrupt and gross. So definitely the media, the mainstream media in Canada, is going to be gunning for this Schmendrick, gross guy. And he is all about climate change, and basically everything about him is sickening. And according to a polling that I just saw this afternoon, despite the fact that he is such a scumbag, and never was elected for public office and is our prime minister, he's polling ahead of the conservatives. Like the liberals are polling ahead of the conservatives. I think it was like 40% liberal to 36 conservative. And I feel like at this point, now I don't want to be too down on the Progressive Conservative Party here in Canada, because I think even though Canada is basically screwed, it still would be better for our slow drive off the cliff to have Pierre Poilievre and the Progressive Conservatives, as opposed to, God forbid, having any more liberals in power at the federal level. But I do feel like so many conservatives, quote unquote, always manage to screw things up when they have such good momentum. And I think it's because they just refuse to be actually conservative. Like Mark talks a lot about how good, thoughtful, intelligent politicians like Margaret Thatcher pulled public opinion to them. They weren't people bought what Margaret Thatcher was saying and selling because she was thoughtful and she made good arguments that brought people to her position. And conservatives are just scared of doing that. Even when they get the best stuff handed to them on a platter and the best situation. So unfortunately in Canada, I think Pierre Poilievre, first, he made a lot of mistakes in the way that he's been dealing with Trump, and that has just really pushed people into Mark Carney's lap. And I do feel that I would be remiss if I did not mention the fact that Pierre Poilievre was not exactly a super freedom crusader when it came to the COVID years. Not impressive. So I personally can't be like super rah-rah about the conservatives. And anyways, they should ditch the name. You can't be a progressive and a conservative. Again, it's just this unwillingness to be conservative, and it's very gutless. So obviously I would be horrified if the liberals won. It's very close, and I really just hope that the conservatives under Pierre Poilievre have not managed to, I'm going to muck up the phrase because I'm a little bit tired, but basically they are extracting defeat from the jaws of victory. And if that is what's happening, it's pathetic, because everybody hated Trudeau. Everybody, like even people who voted for him twice, were sick of him and sick of the Liberals. And everything in Canada is more expensive and awful. Cities are run down, migrants are everywhere, crime is up, shootings are up. It's become a low trust society. Toronto, for example, is just overrun with like pro Hamas thugs. It's deteriorated at a rate which is absolutely extraordinary, and that is under Justin Trudeau's watch, under his years, and there will be more of the same. So we'll wait and see. But yes, there's definitely good reason to believe that Carney is a Canadian stormtrooper. Right. Okay. So there's our Canadian content. Let's see. Oh, well, actually, let's add a little bit of CanCon, because Nicola Timmerman is asking, what do you think of the huge gaffe by Liberal leader Mark Carney, who doesn't know Quebec really as he needs to be, has been abroad so long? Because he has been abroad so long, he doesn't know Quebec. sorry, my syntax was a little bit off. Quebecers are slowly seeing that he doesn't, basically that he doesn't know anything about them. It's quite ironic, as the Liberals have exploited repeatedly the infamous massacre years ago of female engineering students at the University of Montreal Polytechnic School to push gun control, but Carney said it happened at Concordia University. He is European, not Canadian, as he himself has said in the past. Right, so he's one of those people who is so smug but just doesn't know anything. I think him not knowing French, like under normal circumstances, that would be a really huge liability. And certainly that's something that, for example, Brian Mulroney, his French was obviously very, very high level, and that was extremely advantageous to him at the federal level. He's going to make all kinds of gaffes. He's not as smart as he thinks he is. He's just made very, very smug. But he's going to have the protection of Canada's mainstream media, and they're in it to win it. Like Mark always says, you know, the left is very serious about power, and they will do everything they can to keep the Liberals in power. There's a lot at stake for them. I wish it were different, and like I said, I really hope that the Conservatives find their conservative voice. If anybody's listening out there, just be conservative. It will actually work. Okay, let's see what we've got here. We have a question from Doug Cole, who says, "Hi, Laura, wishing Mark a speedy return to health. But in the meantime, hello to my favorite uppity Jewess." Well, thank you kindly. "It is always great to hear your take on things. And shout out to Andrew Lawton." Thanks. I think you and my mom totally think my takes are pretty good. Question finally. "Do you feel Canadian Conservatives' electability will suffer based on the actions of the Trump administration vis-a-vis tariffs and such? I hope not, but what is your take on this?" So, yes, like I said before, I think that Poilievre has handled Trump very badly, and he's really such an intelligent guy, but I think he mucked this up entirely. And obviously, by polling, we can see that it's had quite an impact. Canada is like a fly compared to an American elephant. And all these posers in Canada, whether it was Doug Ford in Ontario or at the federal level, who are like, "Yeah, we're gonna show Trump. We're gonna take away electric power. We're gonna show Trump. We're gonna show America." No, you're not showing anything. All you're showing is that you're an idiot. You're an absolute idiot, and Trump will crush you like a bug. So I think that was all very poorly, poorly planned responses, poorly thought out. And I think the approach with Trump would have been much smarter to do something akin to how Netanyahu came into Washington. It's not difficult. Trump needs to be flattered to a certain degree. America needs to be recognized for the greatness that it holds. And understanding that the American market is Canada's biggest trading partner, the stakes are quite big. So it would have been better to approach this, you know, with honey instead of vinegar. But as I say, I am just an uppity Jewish mother from the suburbs of Toronto. What do I know? Thank you, Doug, for that question. Okay, we are going to, oh my goodness, we are already at our approximate halfway point, which means that I have been talking for a half hour straight, so I am going to just take a little sip of water and we'll carry on. All right, let's see what we've got here. We have a question from George Pereira. I'm sorry, George, I mangle your name every time. Like I see it so many times, but I'm going to try it. Take two. Pereira, you please give me a sound out of that the next time you make a comment. So we've got Laura. "Since World War II, all of the various Canadian governments seemed hell-bent on destroying Canadian manhood and destroying Canada as a nation. How else do you get to a Trudeau, the pitiful and mammy singing younger, and the unelected Mark Carney, in brackets, no relation to Art Carney? President Trump does the math and says, hold on a minute, and the news out of the Great White North is that the elites are all outraged. Krista Friedland, a close relative of the She-Wolf of the Donbass Victoria Nuland, wants Canada to whore itself out to the European Union for nuclear protection from Orange Man Bad. Does no one in the halls of power have any shame? How is any of this not front and center, the main electoral issue? I don't get any of this. Can you explain this rationally, or are they all just insane? Okay. George, there's many, many points in here that we can spend a lot of time discussing. So since World War II and destroying manhood, I mean, basically there has been like a war against men and against boys. And, you know, I saw an interesting quote on X a couple days ago, and it was just that the left, the evil political left, they will do whatever they can to make things worse for humans. It doesn't matter what it is, and it doesn't matter who the victims are or what the hierarchy is. Whatever will cause the most chaos and the most pain to the foundational pillars of Western civilization, that is what is going to be celebrated, and that is what is going to be pushed upon us. And I think that that's as good an explanation as any. So having strong men who protect their families, who protect women, that is obviously a pillar of our civilization, as well as, you know, motherhood and all the things that motherhood entails. So anything that they can do to destroy that is going to be a priority. And that's how we got here, to sort of emasculated male leaders who all speak with the same lisp and don't have any firm positions on anything. They're interchangeable. You could pop one in and out, just like pieces of a puzzle. There's nothing particularly Canadian about them, just like there's nothing particularly British about British politicians now. So this is happening all over the Western world. Our values are being eroded and destroyed, and the destruction and the nihilism is what is it, what is celebrated. And there's really no adults in charge, right? Thank God there's an adult in charge in the White House again, and that's President Trump. But in answer to your question of does no one in the halls of power have any shame, there's not much shame out there. You know, Kathy Schadl used to talk about bringing back shame. She used to say that like the best diet for obese people was the shame diet, and she was very big on shame and public shame. And recently I also read an excellent book, which I mentioned in last week's links, by Adam Coleman. It's a memoir. He has a publishing setup called Wrong Speak. I don't know if you guys have ever seen him, but he's really intelligent, and he wrote a memoir, and a lot of towards the end of the book talks about public shaming and how we're very reluctant to shame people as well. And people can be horrible parents, but nobody is shamed for that. And so shame is underrated and underutilized. So, and you can't shame the shameless, right? So I don't think it's that people are insane. I think that it's just we have like a very godless world right now. People who are not really rooted in Western values and in Judeo-Christian tradition. So we've lost a lot, and it's very hard ground to recover. And so for the godless, they still want meaning in their life, but they get it from all these other idolatrous things. I don't think that they're insane. I think that that's a mistake. I think that there's a certain sector of these people that is very lonely and sad and unhappy and looking for meaning, so they latch on to various causes. But there's also a very influential and affluent sector of this population that is full of evil humans, and they are full of nihilistic tendencies and very terrible base demonic urges and appetites, and they get turned on by the destruction and by the chaos. So that's really what we're fighting. And you know, the addition of lawless migrants and criminals and rapists onto our shores obviously doesn't do much to help the situation and pull it back to normal, to where it should be. So that's pretty depressing. Sorry, I didn't mean to go that dark this quick in the show, but I hope that that addresses some of the points that you've raised. Thanks, George, for your questions and your comments. Okay, let's see. Oh, we've got actually quite a few things. this is a question, a comment from a club member whose name, and as Mark says, perhaps not their real name, Kryptonite for Breakfast, who writes, question for discussion. What about the sudden surge in Liberal Party support in Canada recently? The cloddish rampage of Trump recently has certainly given the Grits the weapon of nationalism for use in the coming election, but there's another rather interesting aspect of all this. From the graphs, much of this surge appears to be at the serious expense of the NDP. Why the sudden loss of faith on the part of their members? I haven't really thought too much about the NDP. I mean, my main thoughts about the NDP are just that they're gross, they sold their soul, and that Jagmeet Singh is just the most disgusting, hypocritical oaf, purporting to represent the working people while he wears a Rolex and drives a Maserati. I think people just like saying his name. They're like, Jagmeet Singh, Jagmeet Singh. We're so multicultural. We have a Sikh leader of the NDP. We're so wonderful. It's like virtue signaling garbage. And I discussed the surge in Liberal popularity before. And I do think that it's just Trump yielding tariffs for America is, I'm not opposed to that. I think that tariffs as a tool of foreign policy, it's not bad. It's good that he has that in his toolbox. But I think that on both sides, the issue was handled extremely clumsily. And as you say, it gave liberals and leftists here an opportunity to wrap themselves in the flag. So that's where we're at now. Let's see what we've got here. Okay, so now what we're going to do is go a little bit closer to some of your homes in the UK. And we have a question from Chris Davies. Greetings, Chris. And Chris says, Laura, lovely to have you back behind the microphone. Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate that. What do you make of the cancellation of Easter at Eastleigh Primary School in favor of Refugee Week in June? The school have made it clear that their intention to become a sanctuary school, which secures funding of between £6,000 and £30,000 for non-British-born students who tick all the diversity and special education needs boxes. At the same time, as the West End of London is festooned in happy Ramadan lights, is this just what us British now have to accept as the inevitable path to joining the Eurabian Caliphate? Keep well, Laura. Oh boy. Chris, I thought that I was like the depressing one previously, but I think this story, like it's utterly outrageous. And so let's get into the meat of it. For those of you guys listening who haven't heard about the story, Easter, and I think in the UK you guys call it the Bonnet Parade. Anyways, it was canceled at a primary school in Britain in favor of a refugee week. And so basically, look, at least for the past 10 years, or when I was blogging even anonymously, I had a section in my blog that was called The UK is Screwed. And I really think it's gotten so much worse. And this is just another example. The UK, I feel, I'm not sure that there's any way out of this because the demographics are so horrendous. And there is such a pervasive attitude of submission. I think it's absolutely outrageous that Easter would be canceled in favor of anything. People respect you when you stick strong to your convictions and to your religion and to your culture. And when you submit and you assimilate into the culture of migrants who have no Western tradition, it's a complete surrender, and it just gives them and their institutions and their leaders an appetite for more. It whets their appetite. Obviously, as you mentioned, there is not just a spiritual component to this, of the submission. There is a financial incentive. Let's be real. Like, sometimes people sell their soul for spiritual reasons, But there's clearly a financial incentive here as well. And as Katie Hopkins put it, there is a worldwide global trade in human flesh. And this is just one example of it. So what we know now is that it's going to keep happening. It's going to get worse and worse. As you say, the West End of London is festooned in happy Ramadan lights. You know, again, Ben Shapiro has this great line about Ramadan. Well, actually, he calls Pride gay Ramadan. Anyways, I digress. I think what you say is this just what us British now have to accept as the inevitable path to joining the European Caliphate. I hesitate to say that you have to accept it, but look what happens to anybody who tries to walk it back. I mean, you have now Tommy Robinson, who is in prison and has been in solitary confinement for more than most like Islamic terrorists, and no appeals to the court have worked. He is being tortured. They want to kill him in prison. And look what happened to Mark with Ofcom. It's actually, we got some breaking news earlier that apparently Ofcom is now going after Gab for free speech. So every element of a free society is under attack, and the demographics are not going to get better. So I would hesitate to say that you have to accept it as inevitable, but I think you also have to be realistic. And realistically speaking, we've seen that Muslims are in every aspect of civic life now, prominent Islamist, if you want to call them that, in the education area, and in many other parts of society, and I don't know how that is possibly going to get turned back. So the more episodes we see of this where Christian holidays or British holidays are being canceled, it's just going to bring more of the same. And unfortunately, anybody who pushes back, whether it's somebody who silently prays in front of an abortion clinic, or even just as an example, what's happening to Laza Fox, where I was actually taken in at first with the fake news. I have to admit to you that I saw the stories and I thought, what the heck is going on? Why would he is he like a pervert? He took pictures of somebody in upskirted pictures. And then I went into the story a little bit further and realized that, no, that's not what happened at all. And they're trying to charge him and make him like give him a rap as being a sex crime conviction and putting him in jail for a couple of years. They want a Tommy Robinson, him as well. So everything's really corrupt now. And I think it would only take somebody like a Trump, you know, if some conservative or just non-leftist figure was charismatic enough to build a movement. And obviously you guys cannot count on Nigel Farage, for God's sake, but out of a country that huge, can't there be other people or a few who could band together to try to save things? You know, when you get to a certain percentage of like Muslims being in the public service, in politics, and among the police, there are things that become sort of irreversible. So I'm not particularly optimistic about Canada. I used to be more optimistic about Australia, but things have gotten very bad there too, especially since COVID. And I think with the United Kingdom, there's worrying signs, not just in England, but look what's happening in Ireland with this incredibly rapid embrace of Palestinianism and migrants. It's a lethal cocktail for any country that wants to preserve its identity. So I hope, I always say, I love being right, but I hope I'm wrong about this, and that's where I think the UK is headed. I'm not sure that much of this is reversible in the slightest. Okay, I hope I didn't depress everybody today. I thought maybe we'd get like a couple of light questions. So let's see what else we've got here. Okay, we've got Wayne Cunnington. Wayne says, hello, Laura. Sorry to hear about Mark's health issues. What do you think about Andrews running for election? He's putting his money where his mouth is by offering the Canadian public a real alternative, isn't he?
What are your thoughts about the British teacher canceling Easter for her pupils over cultural sensitivities, but suggesting celebrating Refugee Day instead? Okay, so we've covered that, and we will obviously, I know that everybody is pulling for Mark, and hopefully he'll have just enough chance to rest before the cruise happens. And in terms of Andrew, obviously, it does take a lot of wherewithal, psychologically, emotionally, financially, to be running for election. It really takes a piece out of you. Your life becomes very public. So we are all really proud of Andrew, and I have a really good feeling about this election campaign. He's genuinely a very good guy, and it would be he would be a tremendous asset to Parliament. And I think that a lot of people in his area, in his neck of the woods, understand that and see that as well. So we're going to all just hope and pray again that we see those two lovely letters, MP, after Andrew's name. And hopefully he'll just roast out the competition. Okay, let me grab a little sip of water again. Let's see. It's funny, we're getting to the end of the show, and now I see like all these juicy compliments that could possibly go to my head. No, it's okay. I have lots of humbling powers around me, so, but there's some nice comments. So let's get to these last few bits before we call it an afternoon. We've got Mark, is it Cher or Sheer? Mark Cher says, love you, Laura. That's very sweet. How about a few words of, dare I say, unqualified optimism for the future? We are living in this glorious time of the great Trump, Elon's magical rocket ships and cars, young people brandishing the torch of conservatism, and so much more to be grateful and hopeful about after our society came so close to the brink. To paraphrase Tevye der Milk Hiker, there's something to be said for being joyful, even when our hearts lie panting on the floor. How much more should we be joyful when there's something really to be joyful for? Well, Mark, you know, I have to agree with you. I do think that among some of the more depressing things, that there are some very good things happening. And I also think that we are underestimating how many miracles are happening on a daily basis. So you've pointed out a few. The rocket ships and Elon and people moving to conservatism is all great, but we've really seen, I personally think that we've seen a lot of actual miracles happening, whether it's in the natural world or some things that I see that have happened in Israel. So I feel like if you're a believing person, and also if you have some optimism, you can see things that cannot be explained in any other way other than supernaturally. So good for you for putting a positive comment and question out there. I quite agree that if you look and if you want to find, there is always what to be positive about. And even though some of the things on the world stage can be quite bleak, you know, we can't be all bleak. So it's important to have, you know, nice things that we do on a daily basis to make things nice for ourselves and everybody around us, but also to try to see the positive. And sometimes I think that there are messages that the universe and God puts out there. And if you really pay attention, then you can see more of it. Okay, thank you very much for that, Mark. We'll go on. We still have a few more minutes. We've got here Charles Pertz. Laura, no question. Just want to let you know that it's always good to hear your voice. You're a beacon of humanity and an inspiration to the rest of us. That is really sweet. I really do appreciate those kind comments. That's very, very sweet of you. And I am here at the pleasure of Mark Stein. And, you know, as long as he can tolerate me, I'll be sticking around. Mark is infinitely patient. And we've known each other now for a very long time, and I am really honored and delighted to be here, and I really do appreciate the opportunity of speaking to Mark's vast, vast community of fans and readers and supporters. I feel very, very lucky to be here, and I do appreciate those kind words. Now we have Kelly. Always glad to hear from you, Ms. Cohen. Between you and Melissa, our boy Mark is well backed up. That is quite true. Thank you for your kind comments. We are a very lithe and effective team, here at Stein HQ. And obviously, we are very, very happy to be part of Mark's incredible enterprise, the great things that he has accomplished, and hopefully for many more years to come. And it's a real privilege to be on this team. And as I say, we're getting on a number of decades already. And one time I will tell you the origin story of that. We don't have enough time for that right now, but at one point we may do that. Okay, let's see. It is now 3:55 Eastern Time. As you know, I don't do any time zone recitations whatsoever, but I can certainly tell you that we have time for a couple more questions or comments, and then we will, soon enough, we will probably call it quits as I get back to some domestic servitude and, you know, putting the last touches on my batch of links for Thursday. So you will have all that to look forward to if you are not sick of hearing from me already today. Okay, so we've got here, okay, these are a few good ones. We've got like three more and we'll do them quickly in session. Dave Rogers says, greetings from Maine, where the war against women is still being waged by trans athletes and especially by our governor. I thought we were at the end of this insanity with President Trump's executive order, but was I happy too soon? Too happy too soon? I keep seeing stories about boys running circles around girls in competition or hurting them. What gives? Yeah, Dave, I feel like, you know, even with President Trump's executive orders, we're still just at the beginning of the end of things. There's going to be a lot more insanity and a lot more pushback, but it's obviously very clear that the trans stuff is, I think, very fetish-based. There's a lot of really sick men out there who are pushing this stuff, and it's going to take a lot more pushback before we get anywhere near previously normal levels. So I've got a story also about a trans athlete, a boy. I mean, basically when we say trans, we should just say not. Like, trans woman is not woman. And I really am very angry at the parents who don't put their foot down. The athletes are just kids, and some of them have had a lot more guts even than parents or the coaches, but especially the coaches and especially the male coaches. There should be zero tolerance for this kind of insanity and this kind of abusive behavior towards women. And my mom has this expression, don't let the tail wag the dog. We cannot let the crazy fetish men who are doing this to women be leading the show. It's absolutely immoral and disgusting. Lots more work to be done. Okay, Fran. Hi, Fran Lavery. Fran says, hi, Laura. I've been reading an Italian news opinion essayist who I enjoy very much. It's Giulio Miotti. I'm reading him to hear his daily reports, which reinforce what Mark says to his readers and partly to practice my Italian. Mm-hmm. Can you recommend a writer from France who gives these kind of updates on the internet so I can drill down on that country's acquiescence to Islam as well and hone my French at the same time? Two birds with one stone, I mean, and quite a horrible saying, I realize, but I'm a bird lover. All the best to your family and shalom, Fran. I can't think of anybody who could talk necessarily about France, but I would recommend that you read the Swiss Egyptian Jewish writer Bat Yeor, Batye apostrophe O-R. She talks about the origins of Eurabia, so that might be good for you to take a look at. And I'll give some thought. Otherwise, for Europe, I kind of would recommend maybe just Jihad Watch. They often have stuff about France in there, Robert Spencer. But Giulio Miotti is great. He's very, very brave, really intelligent, and I quite like him as well. So good choice on that, and I'll give some thought to other French sources. Okay, this is going to be our last comment/question. Sheldon Winter says, at the risk of sounding like an irritating millennial, what are you watching nowadays? That's what people say. What are you watching? What are you watching? Any recommendations for movies, TVs, or books? TV or books. So I haven't gone to the movies in years. I think I don't have the attention span for movies anymore. What did I watch? I think I told you guys one of my guilty pleasures. It used to be People Magazine many years ago, but now I watch Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I know, it's a guilty pleasure.
I do enjoy watching some of the stories, not the ones that have like trans people in them, but some of the other inspiration porn is kind of fun to watch. Somebody just recommended to me a new series, The House of David. It's supposed to be really good. And what else did we watch? I got to think about that. I haven't really been watching too much TV. I watch a lot of Israeli TV, and not all of it is translated into English. But, you know, I'll give that some thought as well. And books, I've read a few really good books. One was Rabbi Ken Spiro, a crash course on the history of Jewish civilization. That was really good. I read another one called The Beauty and the Joy of Shabbat, which was by the chief rabbi of England and Warren Goldstein, the former chief rabbi of South Africa. Also a really good one. But I'll give some thought also to some of the diversions. And I think obviously everybody should have a diversion because some of the stuff is just too hard to deal with if you don't have some fun things to get to at the end of the day. So I think you guys, if I'm not mistaken, that's like probably the end of our questions. Like I said, if you have any other comments or feedback, you can always send a note to the club or to me. You can also find me on X. That's where I like to play. And I will wish you guys a great afternoon, a great rest of your day. And we'll see you next time. And wishing Mark a full recovery. And really, it was a pleasure and an honor to be with you guys. And hopefully I'll be able to do this again at some point in the near future. And you guys take care and have a great rest of your day. Thanks so much for listening.